Welcome back, friends. So we left off with a love of Aquinas and still waters within the church. So back to Francis de Sales. So he dedicates himself to theological study, mostly Aquinas. And then so let's be attentive. Then he takes this learning to the poorest of the poor and those disposed to hate the Catholic faith. And he worked carefully with them. 4 years later, he was made a bishop in a quiet diocese, you know, and that was to be no more of him. He had a very simple life as opposed to Montaigne, who was very comfortable and soft. He didn't have many servants, had a very simple table, and generous to the poor. That generosity, you'll see that. Francis de Sales. As the love of God contains within itself every perfection of every virtue, and more excellently than the virtues themselves, so also it is the sovereign antidote against every kind of vice. So the three virtues stated in the devout life, he puts patience, humility, and meekness. Everyday virtues, little steps, little flowers in the garden. Mm-hmm. There's an echo of Therese here.
Right, yes.
Build up of life of charity in our souls.
Yeah. Yeah, you can see, I mean, there is no real Therese without St. Francis de Sales. So much of his, that introduction to the devout life was so entirely consumed, you know, assumed, I should say, into legitimate French Catholic thought that it just becomes the underpinning of all of the good movements that were given life in French, and really did preserve her in so many different ways from following the errors that were followed in Germany and in England. She has her own errors, of course. You know, I mean, there's always the constant rift. I mean, just a diabolical rip down the center between those authentic Catholic lights and the lights of, you know, the luminosity, the enlightenment, you know, that you rightly direct people to Montaigne kind of as a foundation of that. But there is that decided rift, and the sure foundation, I do think in a lot of ways, was St. Francis de Sales, who, I mean, you had quoted a number, something like 30,000 people. I had always heard it was closer to 80,000 people that he had brought back from Calvinist Protestantism in that region of France, the southern area by Geneva.
Right, and that could be. I think
Professor that might just be in Geneva proper.
Have just been on the cautious side.
Right,
cautious doesn't necessarily mean accurate. It just means cautious.
Right,
just cautious. Yes. A century after Reformation, the 1600s, Europe is unsettled, and you're right to bring up Germany and England, divided, or the lowlands, Dutch,
yeah.
Netherlands.
The Dutch, yeah.
Divided into warring factions. Sarah and I, we do not have time to coordinate ourselves. Right. Whole countries divided amongst themselves, that rip down the middle that you're talking about.
Yeah.
There were two Frances, or two Englands, yes, or two Germanys. And it was difficult to figure out how to be a Christian in this setting. Some followed Montaigne's path, and they construct a domesticated Christianity. And honestly, I think we had more of that 2.5 years ago than we have today. But there's some that think that today, right? We don't talk about religion in the public square. Mm-hmm. Others follow DeSales and rededicate themselves to a glorious adventure of grace. Mm-hmm. And this is my proposition, is the state of many Catholics today. And that is why it is worthwhile to study Francis de Sales. And that's why I propose that he is a man for all seasons, because that's going to be, you know, yeah, we could be Christian, but, you know, don't let that be too intrusive, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that makes me think, too, of, you know, just a line from C.S. Lewis where they're introducing people to Aslan and someone asks the question, is he tame? You know, and he says, no, he's not tame, but he's good. You know, I mean, and a silent or a domesticated Christianity. You know, it's the whole concept of the gospel of nice as opposed to kindness, right? And benignity. It is a good man who worships the goodness with himself and fails to share it with the world around him. And that is very problematic, because I think I've said this numerous times, that there's a far greater evil. It is evil when an evil man does evil. That is evil. And no one would dispute that. But it's to be expected of him, because it's not contrary to his nature. It is a far more grievous thing when a man like a Montaigne, who had all of these natural gifts and abilities and did not put them to the service of the church, but rather put it to the service of his own comfort.
That is right. That's right.
I mean, look at the difference. You know, I mean, you know, De Sales, well, we call him saint.
We call him saint. We absolutely do. We call him saint because he lived all four of the virtues,
right?
Plus the three spiritual, you know, the
cardinal virtues and the spiritual virtues.
That's right. And he lived them heroically. And he taught something, he wrote something, and he goes to the heart of the gospel. 1997, you know, John Paul would say, you know, he teaches from the heart of the gospel. So he's a saint and he's one for all time. He was born into an age of teaching using Thomas, because Calvin, so, all right, if the Calvin lovers come out, they come out. Mm-hmm. Calvin spoke to the learned as opposed to De Sales, who will speak to the poorest of the poor. And his manner was very classical. He reasons on systems, but he has little humor. He doesn't use a cudgel. He uses deadly logic, and he persuades by a teacher's authority, not by a demagogue's calling of names. And he writes French as well as Luther will write German. And he's been reckoned as a pioneer in the modern development of his native tongue. So, Sarah was right, you know, he too had great gifts. He had great gifts.
Well, I mean, fundamentally what you have with Calvin is not an inability to spread a message. I mean, obviously we know that he's very eminently capable about that, but his problem is the arrogance of proceeding from a faulty premise. You know, he's just fundamentally wrong in his essence about God. But his arguments that he creates, if you accept his premise, you must accept his end. And I do think that in the same way now that the church has been, the church always seems to be on our back foot when it comes to new technology. And I don't know why that is. She's always late to the game of using a new technology. And for whatever reason, Luther and men like Calvin were far more industrious in using the printing press and, you know, a lie. What is that old story about, you know, the lie spreads faster than, I mean, yeah, the rumor goes before the truth, right? And the lie spreads faster than the truth. And it's always the truth is truth, you know, to, she has to catch up. She always has to catch up and correct. And so you're always contending against that reality that it was easier to convince them of the lie. And that's why somebody like St. Francis de Sales is so incredibly heroic, right? Because the lie had been spread before him. Maybe a little bit like a St. Augustine too, right? I mean, the lie of Manichaeism and whatnot had already been spread before him. And these are men who, through grace and through humor and through good-naturedness, are capable of really helping people back to truth. And that is an arduous task. It's far easier to you know, for all of us who are parents who are given these tiny little children into our keep from baptism onward, we know the gospel truth of, you know, the Proverbs, train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he's old, he won't depart from it. I mean, there may be fits and starts here and there along the way, but it's so much easier to inculcate, you know, to color on a black, an empty slate, right? It's easier to fill in a blank page than it is to try and insert words once they've been put down. And that's why, to me, he's so admirable.
That's exactly right. All right, my friends, let us pick up with, let's go into a little bit of DeSales' teaching. Till the next time, my friend, Fide Serraccio.